do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Primate Podcast. Today, my guest is the legendary Rafael Cardenas. What's up, man?
Hey, brother. Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate your patience with me, and I'm not being able to do this for a while, and finally being able to come on here. And I appreciate, you know, just all the work that you do behind the scenes too, to, you know, get this moving for yourself and for the community too, and all the people that you, you know, showcase.
Thank you, man. No, I've been seeing your work. We were just talking about it a few minutes ago that I recognized you because of some tickets that I won for some comedy show at the Paramount. So I was like, wait, who's Rafael Cardenas? You know, who's Rafa? And, you know, slowly with that, I started seeing that you're a photographer. You know, you've dabbled in a lot of, like, multidisciplinary artist. That's what I'm trying to say. Jeez.
I just love the creative process. Yeah. So, like, for me, every time, like, something, like, attracts me and I just start working on it and building something, and I just have so much fun with it until, like, something else picks up my attention. I jump on something else. So I have jumped from different arts, including like theater and being in a band for a while too. And you know, I draw a lot too, but I don't showcase any of that. Sometimes I post it on Instagram, but I do a lot of drawing on my own, and photography, of course, and video, which I am totally enjoying and trying to get a short film made right now. So
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that, you've been doing that for at least the photography part for the last 13 years or so, 10, 13 years, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been doing photography since I was a kid. I always had some kind of camera to mess around with. If anybody listens, remembers the 110 cameras and, of course, the Polaroids and all those little cameras that we used to use when we were in the 80s when you would develop your film at the local stores and all that. But, when it was like 2009 was the first time that I was writing for a newspaper. That's another thing I do a lot too, is writing. And I was taking journalism classes. So I started writing for the East LA College newspaper. And then I met some people that worked downtown at a newspaper, community art newspaper called Citizen LA, that focused on the art scene in downtown Los Angeles. And through them, I started writing articles for them, and I wanted to take my own pictures. It was such a small crew. They were like, all right, take your own pictures. So that was the first time that I bought a professional level camera from the photo editor. And that was 2009. So I decided that 2010 was going to be the first year that I literally shot every single day. And I carried that camera everywhere, and I edited every night, and I posted something. So I had some experience in making websites. So I made my own website. So I was, you know, I like to do all kinds of, like I said, I like to do all kinds of creative shit. I like to just, you know, the creative process is my thing. So by learning to work every day, by doing this whole routine every day of shooting, editing, posting, I really sharpened that skill, you know?
Yeah.
And it taught me a lot of different things that first year in 2010. And out of all of the different art things that I've done, that has been the one that has gotten like the most I guess public exposure, you know. So it's gotten me in the LA Times a few times, it's gotten me two museum shows, it's gotten me, you know, nice. LACMA has my photos in their collection, and so also one of my pictures was the cover for what's his name, god damn it, I can't remember his name now. He's a DJ, famous DJ.
Famous DJ.
White guy.
White guy. Dip is Diplo.
Yeah.
Diplo. Oh, dang. Nice.
If you look up a, there's a 2010, no, during 2020, Diplo like saw an article about me in the newspaper, and he wanted one of my pictures as a cover for an album. And he did a whole album while driving around LA when it was empty.
Uh-huh.
And I was walking around LA shooting while it was empty. So, you know, he kind of liked the way that went together, and they reached out to me. I sent them a bunch of pictures, and they just picked one of a bird, which is, you know, it's a beautiful image, and they did a good job of the cover of the all that. But it doesn't really show like the whole pandemic that was happening, but it does show the loneliness, I guess. But,
man, hey, that's cool though. You know, you've just gotten recognition for, you know, just that skill that you like you say you sharpened over the years. And honestly, that takes a lot of discipline, you know, that's to be consistent. I mean, I know, I'm sure like every now and then, like at least for me, like I tell myself, well, I'm going to do this. And every now and then I'll slip up, but it's about just building back up. Like, hey, no, like get back on it, you know?
I think the whole thing is, like, I'm not a disciplined person at all. Like, don't think that I'm, like, you know, I have, like, no schedule. I just, you know, I'm very free form, I guess, in the way that I live my life. But there was something that I really enjoyed every day.
Yeah.
So that's what keeps that part of the discipline going, is like that you're just having so much fun with it and you're really enjoying it. And that was literally like doing the photography was the time that where like do what you want and do what you love and the rest will follow.
Yeah.
That was a time in my life where that happened. Because even though I was always doing what I loved, I was doing theater and I loved it, I was doing all these other things, but somehow photography was the one that just like, boom, it just like, you know, really... really pushed through.
Yeah, and it's the one that kind of took off, right?
Yeah, it took off, yeah.
No, that's crazy. And then right now you mentioned that you are working in some sort of short film that kind of showcases that photography.
Well, because I have like the experience with the photography and I have the experience with theater and actorism, I've always wanted to make a movie. Mm-hmm. And it's finally gotten to the point where I can afford to get a used and... and by afford, I mean making it in payments. a digital camera, video camera that shoots the quality that is good enough for theaters, you know? Mm. So I got my first Blackmagic 6, if anybody knows what that is, Blackmagic 6K. And yeah, I mean, with that, and it's, you know, I'm so scared to pull the trigger because this is something that I've had in my mind for like 10 years or more, definitely more. I've written little shorts, I've done this and that, and it's like every time I'm about to pull the trigger, I get really scared to jump into it. So, but I'm just waiting for everything to be right, you know, like, and not to say how, like, I'm not waiting for perfection.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for the right, like, push inside of me to like, you know, okay, this is definitely the time to do it. This is definitely the crew you need. You definitely have all these things ready. Cause I still feel like I don't have everything ready for it. I'm still also practicing with that camera and shooting things. I shot something with a friend and I'm learning to shoot and edit that. And it's a whole different thing. And color correction and color grading are two different things. If anybody knows color grading, you know what I mean. Color grading is a whole different world that you deal with in movie making. And I'm learning a lot of really good stuff. So, yeah.
And that's cool. Yeah. I mean, you've embraced, like you mentioned earlier, the whole creative process, like just learning, like feeling that nervousness, being a little scared. But then when you finally do it, you're like, oh, yeah, I find the groove to it and you just keep going, you know?
Discovery is the word that I learned way back in the 90s when I was studying theater. It's like you have to make these little discoveries. Mm-hmm. Like every time that you do it, you have to make a discovery in theater. So it's like, as you're the actor in the play, you have to make the discovery that something happened. So you move forward. And that's kind of like what art has, the way that I deal with art has done to me, you know, that every time I find something new or I learn something new, or even within a piece, if I discover like a different meaning, just all those little new things of learning is what really pushes me internally to continue to create.
I mentioned this in a few podcasts back, like at some point, like I feel like I was kind of lying to myself by like saying like, oh, I do graphic design and I do art and I like to do like, you know, some video editing. I didn't want to like say that I was these things because I didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
But then you realize like you're creative, you know, that's what you are.
That's the, I don't know if this only happens to like minorities, but the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Fuck. Like same shit with me. Like I also did graphic design. When I looked at your graphic design, I was like, this guy knows what he's doing. Like you really I mean you're definitely in there and you animate shit and you fucking really do like great drawings and you know you're killing it with that, the graphic design stuff. I love it, especially the animated stuff. But we definitely have that like I'm just fucking around.
Yeah.
You know? Nah, I just do this, you know. Nah, you know, just pay me $50. It's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's the people that we hire sometimes have less experience than us. And, you know, they're not afraid to charge you, you know, a full rate, you know. So if you are a young person, and I'm 52, by the way. This is an old man talking to you. If you are a young person and you are learning to do something and, you know, you want to make money off of it, then don't be afraid to put a price to it, because it doesn't matter what other people are charging. What matters is what you feel comfortable with. So if you feel comfortable with charging $50, then do $50. If you feel comfortable with, like, if you do it at $50 and you walk away saying like, oh man, that's not right, I should have bumped it up a little more, then the next time bump it up a little more. It's totally up to you, and you're worth your time. But just, you know, kick ass at what you do.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
put in the work. Definitely put in the work, and definitely show up.
Yeah, what was like now that you brought up the whole imposter syndrome stuff, like, you know, I've dealt with people who I've had conversations with in the podcast who feel like they're in their spot just out of kind of luck, you know, rather than skill. Yeah. And it's like, no, you gotta give yourself credit too. You know, I mean, sometimes things do happen because you're just at the right place at the right time. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to that place because you've been building towards it too, you know.
Do the reps is my new mantra in my head is do the reps. If you're out there doing the reps, like, you know, you got to do that same thing. Just like when I did photography, I did that photography like every single day. So I was taking literally in the first year, I was taking thousands of pictures every day and editing thousands of pictures every day, just running through them, you know. And you really learn like to see like what's good and what's bad. But you also have to have a natural eye. So make sure you also like dig into what other people are shooting, dig into what composition is, dig into where things should be placed in within the frame and stuff like that. Dig into those things and learn them as much as you could. I'm completely self-taught. And that means that a lot of friends and a lot of books and a lot of YouTube, you know, people have taught me stuff and I have also dug into books. But yeah, do your reps. So like, you know, if you want to build muscle, you don't just go out to the gym one night and, you know, blow up.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to do your reps daily. Mm-hmm. Do your reps daily so that you can build that muscle. So the same way with the creative skill, with any kind of skill that you're doing in life, do your reps, put the time in. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all that, I mean, everything you've been talking about, I feel like you kind of portray it very well in the podcast that you also do with Dancing It's Over. Mm-hmm. Like you bring people that you're trying to highlight, you know, their skill set or whatever they're bringing to that table, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like, again, because of the type of person that you are, you're also kind of seeking information from those people too, you know? While at the same time learning from their experiences.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the whole thing is, well, I'm going to dive into a little bit of like when I stopped drinking. I stopped drinking like 2012 and I used to have friends I would want to hang out, but I would go out to bars still, but I didn't really want to hang out at bars after a while. Like I just wasn't having fun, because what happens at bars and at clubs and everything is like you show up and everything's really loud and you kind of drink and you say hi to your friends, you know, and you're like, what's up?
Yeah.
What's happening? And then you kind of like, you don't really have these conversations, but you know, whatever, when you're there to party, you're just there to party.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized after is like, I would tell friends, well, if you want to kick it, let's have coffee or let's have lunch or something. And what I realized was like, if I would meet with a friend to have coffee or dinner, then we would talk for an hour. We would talk for an hour and a half. We would just talk about shit that we never talked about before, you know? And then you start to get to know people different. So I used to start calling them one-on-ones. So I would then tell my friends that you want to have a one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And it would just be like me and somebody else talking for a while. And so a long time ago, I read this book too. This was 2014 when I read this book called Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. And the book deals with being in recovery programs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a novel. But at one point, he talks about how being in AA or NA, any of those systems, like teaches you how to see things differently. But he did say that dancing sober is a completely different pot or kettle or something like that.
Literally dancing sober?
Yeah, so basically saying that, you know, to dance sober is funny.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing as dancing drunk, but of course he says it in a much more poetic way. And I had been dealing with that, like going to places and trying to dance, and I just felt goofy, you know. It's like, I'm 6'2" and, you know, sober dancing just felt goofy to me. And so when I read that line, I was like, damn, everything changes when you're sober, you know? So I saved those words, dancing sober, literally put them on my refrigerator with magnets, and I took a picture of it. And so cut to 2021, when I started this podcast, I was like, what title will I give it? And so it was I was like, oh, I'm finally using the name Dancing Sober. I knew that I would use it one day. And so the Dancing Sober and the one-on-ones became the podcast.
Nice.
Like, I thought to myself, it has to be one-on-one. And I wanted to bring in people like that, like you're saying, like people that I wanted to highlight, but also to pick their brain in ways that I don't normally get to do. Everybody that I've had on the podcast, except for maybe one or two, are people that I knew before.
Mm-hmm.
And people that I've seen at events, I've seen at our shows, I've seen them. But we've never really had conversations.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to then sit down with somebody like, just like we are right now, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly.
And then you get to really like dig deep and find out, you know, their personal things that motivate them and find out their road to where they got, how they got to where they're at. And yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I also learned from it too. I was at a point where, like the photography thing, like, you know, started to get recognition in 2010, but this was already 2021, you know, and I was like, I need to do something else. I wanted to take my photography to a different level, but the things that I was trying to do required a lot more money. So I kind of got disillusioned a little bit in the photography world because I wanted to do something else, but I wasn't able to do that. And of course, you could apply for grants and stuff like that, but that's, if you have never applied for a grant or something, that's a whole different world, and it's complicated, and it takes a lot of work. And I did try to apply for grants. I applied to quite a few and I didn't get them. So kind of like feeling the void of like creative satisfaction, I wanted to fill it with something. And I was a guest on somebody else's podcast and then decided like, this is what I want to do.
So
then I just started the podcast and was able to, you know, bring in the people that I knew and have been fortunate, very fortunate to know and grateful to all of them that like really give me their time to come in and share their life story.
Yeah, well, exactly. No, that's a good way to put it, because it is a story, you know. It's, you know, going back to some conversation I previously had, it was like, you know, sometimes you come in into these conversations and you feel like, oh, I'm just talking about myself and this and this and that, but it's a story, you know, and stories have been around for years, for hundreds of years, you know, and it's one of those things that you listen to and you're like, damn, this inspires me. Like this, I'm in the same place
where
they are at, you know?
Oral history.
Yeah, you know, and it's powerful. And at the same time, you're also documenting like whatever's going on in this timestamp, you know?
And the other thing too is like, having interviewed so many people in my community now, I'm at episode 85 or 86, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm barely like scratching the surface.
Yeah.
And I said my first 100 episodes, I said that on my first episode, my first 100 episodes are training for me. I'm still training. I'm doing my reps.
You know? Exactly.
So I'm putting in my work. And the other thing about all these people that come in is that all of them, or most of them, a lot of them have these stories that can really be a movie.
Yeah.
They come in there and they tell me these stories and I'm like, these are the stories that we're missing in the big screen, you know, like we are getting the movies of, you know, certain things here and there, but it's not really our community all the time. And it's starting to happen now in such a beautiful way. It's so good to like go into a movie theater and watch The Blue Beetle and watch movies like that, where it's like, it's really Raza. It's really people from East LA. It's really like, it's really happening. So a lot of these stories that I'm hearing should really be movies, and we should really see ourselves like that. And so hopefully like through these conversations, more people will listen and more people will start to look for our heroes within our community, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what I like to do with my podcast. But my main focus is right now, at least in, like we mentioned earlier, Sela. Like it's just, you know, I've always, you think Boyle Heights and you think culture and like rich, you know, and just the people that live in it. But then something like I mentioned too is like when you think of, at least in my terms, from my opinion, you think of Sela, it's not like the, you know, like also like the best thing, you know?
But it's starting to, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's good. Like, first of all, like the what is it, the drawing classes that they have down there?
They have like live art, like
what's the name of the community center?
The place is called
Sela Art Center. So like that started popping, and then you have a couple of art galleries down there, or studios, people that are artists down there, and then you had the river thing recently.
Yeah, the Sela Arts Festival.
Dude, Sela is popping because they're all out there, and just like you, like, you know, it's it is all of LA, but usually all the shows happen in Boyle Heights or in downtown. But it's really good to see like things happen outside. Just like Pomona, they built their own, you know, art world out there. Yeah. You know?
Whenever I go there to like the fair near the, what is it? The Fairplex?
Yeah. Not
the
Fairplex.
One of those locations, the Fox Theater or something around there. I think that might be it. It has like a really cool little art scene. Like
there's a huge art scene. And now they have the Cheech out there. And then, yeah, there's a lot of things going on. And I think that, I think Cela is definitely like blowing up. And so it's always been there. It's just like being highlighted now, you know.
Exactly. So, yeah. And, you know, and that's, you know, I like to make sure everybody gets connected too. Because, you know, we got talent everywhere. You know, it's just about showcasing it.
It's all the same people.
Yeah.
A lot of the shows over here are people from Cela, so it's good that like Cela is now actually happening, having their own exhibits and fairs.
Yeah, when I found out there was they had like a live drawing classes there, I was like, what in Bell? Like that was never a thing, you know. Like, so it's cool. I haven't had the chance to go, but I've been meaning to go out and just kind of, you know, just sketch, just to do it, you know. You know, it's cool. Just. The culture is continuing to grow, you know, at the, you know, whatever generation comes next, it's like the next, it takes it to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
And it's crazy. You've been in Boyle Heights, what, since like early, right? Earlier.
No, 2014 I moved to Boyle Heights. Oh, 2014. Yeah, 2014 I moved to Boyle Heights.
Crazy.
But I grew up, so there's like a line that divides Boyle Heights, East LA. I grew up just two blocks outside of Boyle Heights, so you know, I grew up in what I used to call the Tri-Hood area. So it's where City Terrace meets East LA meets Boyle Heights, so all three like different boroughs, if you want to call them boroughs, like where all three different neighborhoods meet. So I lived there, but a lot of my time was spent, you know, down on Cesar Chavez and Boyle Heights. I had family in the projects, you know, so I definitely knew all this area my whole life. But I did just move over here in 2014.
Okay. Yeah, because honestly, it's really rare whenever I come out to like the Boyle Heights area. Like, I was thinking about that here. I was like, man, it's only a handful of times during the year that I find myself in this area. And it's crazy because it's popping, you know? Like, see it. So you're like, damn. You know, that, and it motivates you to kind of want to bring that also back home, you know? Like, at least for me, going back to Cela, it's like, let's try to find places that can actually host these type of things too, you know, and make it a location where people want to go.
Yeah, for me, I go out to Cela often. My sister lives on Otis and Gage.
Otis, it's in Bell,
Yeah, Bell. So I have hit Southeast Cela a few times for, you know, a few dinners and stuff out there, but not a lot of the local little shops, I should say, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's because sometimes they're kind of hard to find too, and you know. Yeah. But I mean, that's a whole different point. But like for real quick on your photography, like would you consider it like street photography? Like that's your main focus, right?
Yeah. Street photography and / documentarian / journalist sometimes, you know, but a little bit of all those like combined together.
I've seen your work and I think for the most part, the majority of your work will be black and white.
Yeah. So the thing with that is like in the beginning, I started editing and I realized how images looked in black and white, and it was also easier. So the reason why I started to shoot mostly in black and white is because it was easier to finalize an image. So since I didn't really have any training, I just kind of like tweaked images until I found a place that I liked. So I was also imitating a photographer that I knew named Sebastio Salgado, and his images are really dark, black and white, stark, grainy, you know. So I was imitating him in a way where like when my editing got to a certain point and I felt like that kind of, I called it weight, when I felt that weight, then I was like, all right, this is like, all right, this one's done, I love this, this feels good, this feels perfect. And but yeah, and the main reason why I first edited in black and white is because it was easier. I didn't know yet how to like implement color. I still don't have like a specific way to like implement color. I just get lucky sometimes, you know. Color in an image makes there's so much meaning in the color. There's so much that happens to your brain when you look at color. So yeah, it's trickier when you start working with color. But like I said, sometimes you get really lucky and all the things are in the right place. And because I don't really move things around, you know, I just kind of have to get lucky and
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So you're saying, because you're just basically just shooting the shot.
Whatever is there. Yeah. And so you get lucky, or you see, you're lucky if you're at the right place at the right time and you see things that are, you know, just colorful and right.
Yeah. Because at this, I mean, I was looking at your website earlier and you had some stuff in color, but it was that in regards to like just like the stuff you used to do before, like the backyard shots and all that?
Yeah, so that was a show. Backyard Tableau was a show that was at Vincent Price Art Museum. That was my first museum solo show, and that was the first time that I showed in color.
Nah.
And the curator actually selected those images, and we went through my stuff, and she would kind of said, "What about those over there?" And we kind of started looking through them. She was like, "This is amazing. Let's work with this." So. She helped me select the images for that, and we put together a small little show. And what I was doing then, so as I, like I say, like I always like to continue to like to find new things.
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning, when I was shooting, it was literally like just get up, get the camera, walk out and shoot as many pictures as you can, and then get home and edit them and pick one.
Oh, damn, for real?
I was posting only one a day.
Uh-huh.
And that editing process is what also like taught me a lot, because there's so much junk you could post, but I mean, I have a gazillion bad pictures, you know, but if you take 1,000 a day, you're going to find something that's good that you can fix, that you can, you know, fit into your style. And so when I would post that one, people would be like, "Oh, that's a great shot." And then the next day, "Oh, that's a great shot." You know, people didn't know I was running around getting thousands of shots. One day I literally came home and edited 10,000 in one day. Yeah, that was a giant festival though, so it was like all day just snapping pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what was I saying? I forgot again.
No, it's okay. About the pictures you'll walk around, Tika.
This is what happens when you get old. Yeah, so I used to shoot a lot of stuff and then pick one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided like, okay, I want to switch things up, so I want to try to force myself to shoot color. I'm going to force myself to shoot with only one lens.
Mm-hmm.
All those are shot with the 50 millimeter lens. And I'm going to force myself to shoot within a confined space. So that's when I picked backyards. It's also a documentation of how we use our backyard. So I was announcing, this was back in Facebook. I don't have Facebook anymore, but I used to write, let me know if you're having a backyard party and if you want me to take some pics. You know, these are for an archive that I'm creating, and I haven't done this in such a while. I should do it again, because it's kind of like a lifelong project. It never ends, right? And I still have a ton that I've never shared. But then people would invite me to their house, and I would stay for 2 hours. I would shoot as much as I could, and then I would, you know, bail. And they would always be like, "Stay to eat," or "Stay to this." Uh-huh. And I was like, "No, that's cool. Like, I want to be the journalist. You know, I want to be the outside person, just coming in and doing my job and leaving, and not being like a part of the party, kind of." So for the most part, I would try to do that. Of course, sometimes it was my friends' events and I would just shoot them. And sometimes it's my own family events. And of course I was there, but just to have like a document of how we use our backyards, you know, it's like, and I would put in the note, like whether it's a divorce or a wedding, like let me know. But if you're having a party in the backyard, let me know. Yeah, I should do some more of those.
No, that's cool, because you're capturing, like, it's just like authentic expressions of whatever people are going through.
Yeah, yeah. It's always hard to say how authentic something is when you're pointing a camera at something, but I guess that's as true. Authentic as you could get, because people act different, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, you start like, you know.
And it's changed completely, too, because like in 2010, when I started doing this, I would go to shows and there would be like maybe two or three photographers.
Yeah.
Now you go to shows, how many photographers do you see?
Every angle.
There's a photographer like every 5 feet in the front. There's so many photographers and which is awesome that everybody's documenting, you know, but people act different in front of cameras now because of Instagram, because of Facebook. You know, it wasn't that popular back then when I started doing this. So people now, when they see you with the camera, they're like, "Oh, this is going to go up somewhere. So I better
present something. Yeah, exactly.
I better present my brand, you know?"
That's true. I mean, I guess that's the one thing about street photography. Like, you don't have to worry about that. Like, you capture exactly where you're at, you know, and just you either get it or you don't. Because, yeah, otherwise with people, yeah, you're saying, you know, there's only a certain level of authenticity.
Yeah. I mean, it is authentic in a way, but it is also like, it's a facade of the party facade, you know? Yeah. That's what I call it, you know? Like, when you're out partying, you put on your party face.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So, yeah. I mean, how happy are these people really sometimes?
I know. Once you take up. Yeah, yeah, you know, kind of touching base on the dancing sober stuff. Like, I smoke marijuana, you know, but I've been having like these moments of reflection where I'm like, maybe I want to try this just sober, you know, like, yeah, yeah. Like before with podcasts, like every podcast I'll be like lighting one up, like, yeah, you know, smoking or talking. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry guys, I'm smoking. But like, I kind of try to step away from that because at some point I started just doing it sober. And I just felt like, of course, I was like a lot more clear-headed and more
present.
More present, exactly. Even if you know, when I'm doing it while I was you know, high or something, I'll be like, yeah, you know, but it wasn't the same. Like, yeah. I felt like I got more, I don't know what it is.
It kind of, I could tell you that you do have moments of clarity, but even sober now, like, I have moments of like, I feel like I'm high and I forget everything. And and that's probably also because of age. But I mean, some people, it's all on the individual. Like, I would never tell somebody that they have to stop drinking or have to stop doing drugs. It's like, it's all on you. And if you start feeling like you shouldn't, then maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah.
But nobody can tell you. Nobody could have told me to stop drinking. Mm-hmm. My mom tried to tell me for so many years. Uh-huh. But it's not until the individual himself decides to, like, you know, cut it. Because it's a coping tool, you know? So, I mean, that's how I used it. That's how I realized that I used it as a coping tool. It's definitely like self-medication. It's definitely like, you know, just drink that and shut up, you know, and drink that and be merry, you know, in a way too. So it's tough to say, you know, how to tell somebody else to do it. I just know that for me, I had to stop, and for health reasons too, and for a lot of reasons. And it's just like, yeah. But find your ground, you know, find where you're comfortable at. If you're comfortable with the little low dose, you know, edible or whatever, you know, hit it. That's cool. That's something I had to quit too, and I used to love weed. But I can't do it anymore because I can't function with it. I just can't I quit that a long time ago.
Yeah.
I just can't function with it. And that's why I had to stop it, because it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, no. I did the self-reflection on it, and I was like, maybe I can just try it differently, you know, and just see how that goes. And, you know, so far it's good. I mean, I'm sure the moment I walk out of here, I'm going to spark up, you know, but you know, I'm not going to lie. But, like, I'm trying to be as present as possible clear when I'm actually having a conversation and trying to connect, you know.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, especially, like, if you're working, you know, make sure you want to be present. Yeah. You want to, you know, focus. And it makes sense. I've seen comedians now, because I've seen some comedians that just don't fuck with nothing before they hit the stage, where, like, you would imagine they would want to be loose, but they're like, nah, because I just forget shit, and I fuck up my whole set because I didn't go to the right joke. So they prefer to not drink or smoke before a show as well.
I mean, for sure. I mean, my whole thing was like, I'll do it so I can get the jitters out of me, and, like, you know, the butterflies you get if you're going to do something, like, big, I guess. You're like, oh, fuck, okay. I need something to kind of mellow me out, you know? But, like, I've learned to embrace that feeling. Like, I recently told myself, I haven't felt nervous in a while. Like, I want to feel nervous about something, you know? Like, the fear of having to do something. Like, I don't know. I feel like, low-key, I'm a little addicted to that. Like, I want to feel the nervousness of taking on something new, you know?
Yeah, that's the fun of it.
Yeah.
That's the fun of new shit like that. So, all right, right after this, we're going to... What can we do? I'm going to make you try to do a wheelie on my bike.
Report, Eddie broke his head. Nah, it's like, tomorrow I'm having like my first, air quotes, panel discussion in front of like this group at a museum in Ontario.
Cool.
It's cool. It's a very cool opportunity that somebody thought I was prepared and ready for. Like, I'm scared shitless.
Perfect. Here's what I always say is, like, as long as you go in there and you talk about the things that you know about, and you never lie, then you're good.
Yeah.
Because you're just talking about exactly what you're saying, what you know. You know, just don't start adding shit that you don't know.
Yeah. Because you're just
Yeah, because that's when you're going to start to fuck up. But if you're just going to be honest about your life and about your experience and about what you know and sharing the things that you know how you've been through them, then it's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. And remember that they're calling you because of what they've seen you do. Yeah. So you definitely are qualified to be there. You're definitely like what they're looking for, you know, so...
Yeah, that's how I started. People have been kind of saying that, and I've really been trying to apply it. Like, yeah, okay, now this is a moment. You know, or again, when people are feeling like they're not sure about themselves, I've been trying to push that same thing that I've learned from others. Be like, nah, like they want you there. Like they know you're worthy, you know? Or even if, I guess, they didn't think you were worthy, you know you have the skill set. It's just a matter of taking a deep breath and just walking through that door, you know?
Go get it. Just don't get super high.
Imagine. Oh man, no, that's it. I like challenging myself, and I really try to push people whenever they feel like a type of way about what they're doing. It's like, nah, you got this, you know. Like I didn't know what I was doing when I first started doing any of this. Like, it's just, again, like you say, you do your reps, you figure it out.
Your reps.
You have backups. And I brought these, like, I'm, you know, in case I need them. But you learn like little things of the game, you know. And
we fuck up sometimes. Yeah. You know, I mean, sometimes I have fucked up a podcast, mm-hmm. where there's only one that I had to completely X out, but that was because the GoPros went out, and I didn't even notice that they went out. And so the whole thing was caught in audio, but mm-hmm. there was no GoPro of it. So one of those is gone. And then I have fucked up the sound a few times, but you learn and you keep going. And I'm just not at a point where I can hire somebody yet, you know. So, and people say get an intern, but I don't feel right putting somebody to work, you know. It's a lot of shit. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of time, and I value people's time. So until I can pay somebody, I'll be doing it by myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at the same time, you're just fucking sharpening your own sword, you know. You're just getting fine-tuning it.
Let's get some sponsors, bro. Let's get some sponsors so that we could start paying some people and start, you know, working right.
Yeah, somebody recently told me that there's there's multiple resources out there, but apparently, like, there's this initiative somewhere, I think here, like, either Boyle Heights or Southeast LA, that they're looking for just creatives and stuff to apply for grants. And he's like, dude, only for, like, 10, the same 10 people apply every year, and they always get it because there's not enough people applying. So I was like, dang.
Grants are tricky, bro, because there's a lot of restrictions sometimes. Like, if you get the money, you have to do this. If you get the money, you have to report X. If you get the money, there are some that are just what they call not free money, but, you know, money that you can use in any way you want. Those are the ones that I like to apply for because they don't require a lot of I know that I'm not good at reporting. I don't have a staff to handle, like, you know, shit like that and keeping records. So I like the grants that are just, you know, oh, here's $5,000 because you've been, you know, doing what you've been doing. So,
yeah,
just read all of the, make sure you read all of the fine print. Yeah, exactly what the requirements are and what they expect, what the deliverables are. And yeah, but definitely look into them, bro. If you can write a grant proposal, do it more than once, like, you know, and you are going to get rejected.
Yeah.
You are going to get rejected because, you know, it's like applying for a job, pretty much. There's going to be a lot of people applying for the job. Even if there's less people, even if it's only 20 people applying for the job and there's 10 grants, there's still a chance that,
you're like, not going to get it.
Yeah. And it's acceptable. But definitely the thing that I learned is always apply the next year. Always apply the next year. Because the same people look at them and they remember you and they see your growth, you know, and stuff like that. So definitely apply, I've gone through it already, and I've learned what's good for me and what's not good for me. But if you've never applied for a grant, just start. Just start. Apply for anyone's. Apply for little ones. Apply for, just look at them. There's like a list of qualifications. That's the first thing you read. So read the qualifications. And if you fit those, then boom, hit it. Just go for it. But then look at, you know, well, what do they expect from me? If you can handle that, then, you know, then handle it. But no, you really do have to be careful at the whole thing, because, you know, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. You're going to have to learn to budget your money. If they're, let's say, for example, some grants are like, you know, to provide a service. If you're going to provide a service like teaching workshops and you're a newbie, you might not remember, you might not take into account all the things you need to buy, all the gas you're going to spend, all of the other jobs you're going to have to turn down because you're busy doing this, you know? And so there's a lot of things that you don't realize. You're like, oh, damn, it's $10,000. Yeah, but you don't realize how much you have to spend to get to that point. And, you know, and if you have to incorporate it and all these other legal fees that you might have to do, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
So
that's a lot, huh? That's
just be careful. Be careful because a lot of times artists, friends of mine, they've gotten grants to, you know, make an art piece. They're like, hell yeah, you know, $15,000, but the fucking piece ends up costing, like, the production of it costs over $10,000. So for, like, all of their hours of actual work, you know, they only got, like, $5,000, but it took X amount of months to make, and it's really pennies in the end. When you do the math, it's less than minimum wage if you're not careful, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's true. That can definitely just, like, you know, fall through your fingers real quick.
Yeah, but definitely apply. Like, those grants are out there to get. So if you've never applied for a grant, you're curious about it, just apply to learn the process, too. Like, it's so easy now, too. Everything is online. They've made it easier now where some of them are like, you know what? Let's just first see if you're qualified. So the first step of the grant is enter who you are. So it's just like, my name is this. I've been an artist for X years. I do this kind of work. This is my website. Here are some images. That's the first step. So by doing that, the first step, then they can eliminate people. So if they continue to call you to the next step, then you're already in the mix. So at least it's less time of yours, you know, if you don't get in.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those processes that you're like, oh, well, how do I start? Where do I get info from? And again, like you said, it's just a really just shooting your shot, you know, like just do it.
Put in your reps. If you put in your reps on grants, you will get grants.
Yeah.
I've applied a lot and I've gotten a few, but it is, that is a game of like, what can you provide? So they have so many people applying. So you do want to like up your numbers. You do want to like showcase yourself, you know, in the highest regard. And some people even hire writers. I did, one of the ones I got is because I had a writer do most of the work for me.
Oh, to put it, can I put
Yeah, put the package together. Yeah. And so, because I don't know how to write like that, you know, so they put the whole thing together and yeah, it worked that way, you know?
That's so interesting. Yeah, it's funny because a few days ago, I forgot what I was doing. I think it was like some sort of proposal for some affiliate program. I was like, yeah, let's see what happens. So, I don't know how to write either. I'm not a professional. I know how to, you know, I got decent grades in English, but point is like, I can't write a cool ass paragraph. So, going back to what I mentioned earlier about AI tools, like I go to ChatGPT and I was like, hey, write me a proposal on blah, blah, blah. Give me these restrictions.
Dude, ChatGPT is amazing, but be careful. I fuck with it just to learn it, right? Uh-huh. So this is another thing. Like I love learning. So once that came out, I'm like, yeah, let me go see what this thing does. I have been messing with it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is literally cool amazing, but you do have to be careful that you don't sound like ChatGPT. Yeah. So you do want to take what ChatGPT gives you and then read it and rewrite it in your own words or change what you can to make it feel more human.
Yeah, for sure. Give it some flavor. Because otherwise, you're like, wait a second. This reads like somebody's just, you know, like Siri when it reads.
Yeah.
Stuff, you know?
And they might throw in some things that if you don't read every line, you know, you don't know what the hell could be in there. So definitely read through every single line and stuff like that. But yeah, ChatGPT is a great resource. It's a resource. It's a tool. But make sure that you give it your own life, I guess.
Yeah, no, you have to because, I saw somebody posting some stuff on Instagram and I was reading the captions and I was like, this sounds eerily like ChatGPT, you know? Like, you could have changed some few words or something, but it sounded like it. You know, not bashing anybody, but it's like you said, if you're not careful, you'll read it and you're like, wait a second.
Consider it like a calculator is what I tell people. So, like, you have a calculator and you want to, you know, you're like, shit, what is 169.73 times 375.99, right? Like, you can't do that in your head. But so then you're going to ask the calculator and you enter those numbers. Now, the human is the one entering the numbers. Just like on ChatGPT, the human is the one entering the questions.
Yeah.
So with those questions, you can then, like, you know, ask it a second question. to, mm-hmm. you can ask it to change it a different way. So make sure that the equation that you're entering is what you want.
Exactly.
And you can continue to change the equation and add numbers so that it gives you a different result. So
yeah, I had asked it. That was like, hey, make this, give me a prompt. And I was like, okay, make it sound more like relatable, or like, I use keywords, you know, like make it maybe sound a little bit more like, I put street. I was like, make it sound more street. And it starts
up, homie.
Basically, it was like, yo, check this episode out. It's on the grind. And I was like, okay, this sounds like some straight out ripoff, like slang.
Yeah. I asked you to write a rap. It was so dumb. It was worse than anything ever, ever, ever written in rap. And yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's why people have to remember like you said, it's a resource. It's a tool that you can use. It's like you have a hammer, like the hammer can be used different ways, you know, like you figure out the appropriate way to.
Yeah. I mean, and with the math equation, like if you enter one number wrong, you're going to get a bad answer.
Yeah.
So make sure you check all of it is my point. Make sure you know what you're saying.
Real quick with going back a little to with your podcast. I'm like, you said a lot of the people that you have on the show usually tend to be like friends, people that you may have known or come across with, you know, before. Like, what are you doing, like, moving forward? Like, is that you still your thing, like, going to people that you know, or kind of, like, expanding and just kind of taking their chance on just people you come across?
So, I actually recorded an announcement that I didn't post. And I recorded an announcement saying that at episode 100, everything was going to change. I haven't posted it yet because I still don't know yet what I'm going to do. But I know that it needs to change.
Yeah.
I know that for myself too, like for me to continue to enjoy it, something different has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. One of the options is, instead of having them come in and do it the way that I do it, is to like actually visit people and make it like a vlog cast.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
If that's a new word. Where I'm interviewing people while they're there, so it's documenting it, but then editing it in a way that it can be also audio, you know, and still have that same kind of quality and also still have the same kind of conversation. But for that, I would need two camera people at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the sound equipment already and all that for that, but I just need two people to operate the cameras. So that's one thought. Another thought is just to go with my travel kit and go straight to their studios and shoot inside their studios instead of here. But I don't know. I just think I want something different. I don't know what it's going to be yet.
Yeah.
I'm episode 85, like I said, or 86, I think, I forget. 84 or 85, somewhere there. Yeah. Mid-80s. And I'm going to count down from 90. And once I get to 100, I don't know what I'm going to do. But
yeah.
Something's going to change. Something, I just want to shake the... rattle it a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, no, I get you, because I mean, this is episode, gonna be episode 98, I think. So I'm about to reach 102, and they're like, what are you gonna do? You gonna do something special? Yeah. I'm like, I'm hoping, like, I want to, but again, I'm still trying to figure out what that's gonna be like, you know? But, you know, it feels good. You know, I started this podcast back in 2018, so it's taken me a while to get to 100.
You stopped for a while, or?
Yeah, I took all of last year off, because that's when I came up with the monkey drawing and, like, the, you know, all that stuff, and rebranded. But yeah, I took the whole year off, and this year I've just been kind of like powering through again. But, you know, of course, taking that year off kind of makes things kind of lose momentum. You kind of have to start all over again.
That's hard. Yeah. That's, you know, the whole thing of like, I always go to like the gym example where it's like, you know, if you step away from the gym for a year and when you come back, those reps are going to be hard.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Those first reps are hard, and you got to get back into the rhythm and everything. And, just doing it alone is hard, and it's not as simple as it seems to post these once a week. And it looks easy sometimes, and sometimes it feels easy. But when you step, like I've also stepped back and gone, like, wait a minute, why am I trying to do two? Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I don't realize like, oh, this is a whole day of shooting, a whole day of editing for me, and it's, you know, if I have a whole day, you know, so if I don't have a whole day, I have to somehow get it done. Anyways, yeah, put in your reps.
Put in your reps. No, I love that. That's
100 episodes, huh?
Yeah.
Damn.
That's good. It's cool. I mean, I feel like anybody can be like, you could fit more, but, you know, it's everything at its pace, you know?
Oh, dude, yeah. Don't, Yeah, just do you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Plus, it's been cool. It's been a ride just kind of getting to know people. I'm sure, like, for you as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just reconnecting with others and, like, picking their brains and just figuring things out. Like, it's just brought a new sense of understanding for me about the people around me. Yeah. Just taught myself, or I was able to learn things about myself that I didn't know about before, or, you know, just change things. So the fact that it's just making me a well-rounded person in the progress is just another benefit, you know?
For me, too, it's like, these things are going to live on YouTube forever. So, like, 15 years down the line, if a kid who's, you know, a kid who's born right now and is 15 years from now and listens to my episode with, you know, Judith Hernandez or with John Valadez, you know, these OG artists from the 70s, or, you know, Esparza family, you know, Ofelia Esparza, who is now past 90 years old. If these kids get to hear these episodes of them and learn about them, you know, through what I put together, then that's awesome for me too. Because, you know, I one of the main reasons for this archive is for that people in the future get to hear this from them directly, because I had nothing like this growing up, you know, where I could find all the things about the artists that I liked in the community and stuff like that. So that's definitely one of the goals of the archive.
Yeah, and it's always cool. I recently found like an old magazine, and I was like, it was from like 1972 or something. I was just going through it, knowing what was going on there, or at least trying to understand it. I was like, dude, it was such a crazy time.
Cool.
You know, so that's what I want, you know, whoever listens to, like you said, in the future, like, well, what was LA like 2023, you know? It's like, hell yeah. But nah, it's cool, man. I really do appreciate everything that you've been doing with your podcast, because, again, it's you listen to it. I listen to it, watch it while... Sorry, I shouldn't say that. Watch while I'm driving, but it's in the bottom, and I'm like, on the stop sign, I'm like looking, you see what you guys are doing. But it's cool, you know. Again, it's motivating just to hear people's stories, and you know, outside of the ones that I have.
Yeah, you are not alone. There's a lot of people that are going through the same shit you're going through. You're not alone, Raza.
Well, wait, with that being said, man, I mean, where can people find your show? Where can they know more about you?
Just look up Dancing Sober. You could Google it, or you could go to YouTube and look it up. DancingSobr. So it's not the whole word. DancingSobr. Also on Instagram. And also my website is rafa.la. That's the easiest thing to remember. If you go to rafa.la, it could take you to my everything. And don't forget to like and subscribe.
Yeah, exactly.
Please subscribe. I'm almost at 1,000 subscribers, which will monetize me. So don't forget to like and subscribe on YouTube.
Yeah, dude. Okay. I'm sure you're going to get that pretty soon. And hey, I'm going to be looking forward to the stuff that you do past that 100.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's going to be different. It has to be different. I have new cameras. I have new equipment. And I want to start implementing that. So,
Hey, cool. One last question. Your intro, that's so cool. Like, it's just straight to the point. Like, the little song... few seconds, and then at the end, you know, basically the looks like a repeat, people with a different tune or something.
The inspiration or the what do you call it, like the reference, is Better Call Saul.
Okay,
you watch it.
Yeah,
it just has a bam bam thing, it cuts off
like okay.
And so I fuck with like the little beat maker thing on GarageBand, so I made that beat myself and all that. With the little
that's so cool.
Akai little push button drum pad that my daughter got me, and I just edited. That's a picture that I took of myself underneath the lights at the Pantages Theater. So that's why it has the lights in the back.
So
yeah, and for some reason I was like, that's me fail, you know. So I covered my eyes and I wrote the Dancing Sober in front of it, and you know, I just kind of like. Made it a little like dirty, and in the video, when you watch the video, like it's a little dirty, a little shaky, and it has the same kind of like doo-dum, 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 and then it's off.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, to me, it kind of reminded me of this like this Adult Swim, like it's just like this random clip, real quick song, and then just the text comes out. I mean, your text is already there, but point is, it was a cool intro. I was like, hell yeah, this is a cool way to like people remember the sound, you know?
That's. I appreciate that coming from like an editor like you that makes these graphic design like art shit. Yeah.
We gotta you know, what's it called? What am I trying to say here?
Collab.
Yeah, you know, we just do it. All right, bro. But thank you again so much for taking the time to come out.
Dude, I appreciate you so much. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Everybody, go check out Dancing Sober, like and subscribe, and
gracias. Social prime is for life, homie.
Peace out, everybody. Good night.
Bye. Thank you.
under the lamplight, waving goodbye, giving me a fright, smoking this way. Hey yo, it's like, that's that serious. Cause I sleep skin to skin. And she started mentioning about her exes and how I'm different, saying I'm crazy from time to time, but that's okay. She's saying her father wasn't in her life. I forget, broken girl's my favorite type. I'm saying an interchange doesn't come from the light. We locking eyes, knowing the next words were gonna be lies, but in fact behind doors we weep and cry from experience. Betrayal comes from close friends. I still have walls up talking to my girlfriend, but they coming down, especially when she wearing a nightgown. I see my love waiting for me under the lamplight, waving goodbye, giving me a fright. Smoking this last bit, I'm pretty fried. I must admit, I do cry a little bit sensitive, drinking this lean shit.